Hey everyone, welcome to the Mayor's Table. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about policing here in the city of Farmington, the state of New Mexico, and the national challenge going on right now to recruit great officers to make sure that our communities are safe. You're going to enjoy Farmington Police Chief Steve Hebby, who's here to talk with us. Stay tuned. Hey everyone, welcome to the Mayor's Table. I'm Farmington Mayor Nate Duckett. With me today is Farmington Police Chief Steve Hebby. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
It's always a joy to have you on the show.
Appreciate being here.
It's going to be a long show because I know how much you and I love to banter about Green Bay Packer football, you know, the Wisconsin Randy Old Fashions. But let's stick to local crime and
policing. I think the contract with Russell Wilson and the dead cap money that Denver's facing might be a topic you could wax philosophical on.
We're going to have a JV on the field for a few years. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, lots changing out there in the world of football, but that's not why we're here today. We're here today, Chief, to talk about policing in Farmington, things happening here in our states. Farmington Police Department is a very active police department. I think I throw numbers out there every now and again for folks to understand kind of what the call volume looks like. And, you know, we had 5,800 calls in February. Mm-hmm. But that's, I mean, it's usually about 6,000 a month. Mm-hmm. 70,000 calls for service in a year. Much of those are traffic related and animal calls actually have a very high part of that call volume as well. But, it's a very active police department. I just appreciate your service, the service of our law enforcement officers and all the civilians. I mean, it's a big department. It's a big operation. So thank you.
Yes, sir. You know, it is a busy department. We've stayed really fairly consistent in that 70 to 80,000 calls for service venue. You're right. We're multifaceted. So we run the animal control unit. We do, that is one of our busier units, trying to make sure that the animals in our community are taken care of and taken care of appropriately. So we are a big, busy agency, and last year was a long year for us. It was a difficult year for our community and for the PD, but I'm always pleased to have a chance to talk about the department and the good work that our folks are doing.
Yeah, well, you know, we've come through some really rough years, 2020, tough time recruiting officers to the positions. I feel like things have gotten a little bit better, but things have also changed at the same time. And where are we at now when you look at kind of our staffing levels and even our tenure levels? That's changed dramatically too. We've had a lot of retirees.
Really, really has. You know, our recruiting has gone somewhat better over the last couple of years, but it has been a struggle, and we have not been able to achieve the success that we had pre-COVID. And then, you know, 2020 was just an unbelievable year of a variety of things, right? We had the pandemic that started, really roared through for the most part the entire year and into 2021. And it brought all sorts of uncertainties to government officials that were trying to make decisions down in Santa Fe. So it was a stress on police departments across the state and across the country. Then we had the George Floyd and the aftermath, which was, you know, it depends on your perspective, but it was certainly a challenging environment for law enforcement in the wake of it. And since then, you know, we have struggled to bring back, I think, a measure of respect to the profession that was lost in the wake of that, and it wasn't just a couple of protests. It was really most of that year. If you recall, it was also an election year. It was a contentious election year as well. So it was a very difficult time, and 2020, I would tell you, was kind of a bellwether year, in my opinion, because we've not really been the same as far as a profession and our ability to bring good men and women into it anymore. It has been much more of a struggle for us, and we are well short of the recruiting goals that we would have to be a full-staffed agency.
Yeah, and I think you've seen kind of the response. It's been mixed. I mean, you had the early calls for police reform, which, you know, we need to stop hiring police officers. We need to hire mental health professionals and send them out instead. We need to defund the police. And you saw a number of different states and big, you know, big urban cities kind of take that banner up. But I think that's also changed to some degree. I think that's kind of quieted down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the damage has certainly been done when it comes to individuals identifying themselves as somebody who could be a police officer and being thick-skinned enough to kind of handle the other components, not just the daily duties of a police officer, which are unique and difficult in their own ways and not something that most people want to do on a regular basis, but then to also have to deal with the public outcry. When something happens in a city 1,000 miles away, it impacts police officers all over the place.
Yes.
And in response to some of that, though, what we've seen here in New Mexico, of course, is a lot of money being thrown at, you know, public safety components, increases in salaries for police officers. Mm-hmm. We've certainly had to kind of shore up our part of that. And when the state raises it 15%, we know that, you know, we've got to be competitive to some degree. We've got to find the best people.
Right.
Are we moving in the right direction in that way?
You know, I am. I might not be the right person to ask on it.
Yeah, right.
I'm a little bit more of a purist when it comes to the profession, and I don't tie your desire to be a police officer with money. That maybe catches their eye on the front end, but you're not doing this job. You're not putting up with all the indignities of it. You're not putting up with all the stresses of it and the potential harm and at times actual harm because you're making a lot of money.
Right.
First of all, we'll never pay you enough. It's still government. You know, you're not making what Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson's making ever to be a police officer. It does not matter what you do. If you get shot, if you get stabbed, you're not making that kind of money. So I get more nervous, honestly, when we are just throwing money at the issue and pretending that that's fixing it, because that negates why you do it in the first place. And, you know, and it's a little bit, we're closing the barn door after the horse is already gone. And so now we're throwing money at it in 2023 and 2024. And we are already in the midst of a significant crisis in recruiting and retention. So, you know, money is not the answer to me. And I say that, you know, confidently because money didn't get us here.
Right.
You know, I don't have a large exodus of cops saying I just don't make enough money. I have a large exodus of cops saying it is not worth the risk. It is not worth the contempt and the demonization. It is not worth working for government when government itself attacks the profession and attacks the men and women who are doing that job. And this one is a bit mystifying to me why we have such a difficult time making that connection. But some of it is the disassociation, which is, you know, well, this shouldn't affect them. And so if you're sitting at home, you know, okay, the them is my police officers and other potential candidates. But honestly, how would you react to it? So if this is you, do you want to do that job when this is what's in front of you? When every mistake is amplified and trumpeted? When it's used as broad brushes to paint you, even though you didn't make the mistake, even though you had nothing to do with it, it wasn't even your department that was involved in it, but yet you are demonized the same as everyone else. And the answer, obviously, based on our recruiting numbers and the sheriff's office and as president of the Chiefs Association, statewide, I'm telling you, the answer is people don't want to do it. So, yes, when you think of somebody else doing it, and they should be able to rise above that, and if we pay them, they will still want to do that, whoever they is. Well, there isn't a they. They're not doing it in significant numbers, and it does not go back to money. It went to why did this crisis start? How did we get in this trouble in the first place? And so when I was researching for my radio show, the Cop Shop, I'd look up a couple of articles, and one of them talked about resignations across the nation for police. Now, resignations aren't, I made it to retirement and I retire. I'm short of retirement. I have 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and I'm going to resign. And resignations nationwide for police were up 47% between 2019 and 2022. So in a four-year span, resignations jumped, you know, nearly 50%, which is just stunning. On top of it, during that same time period, retirements jumped by 19%. So that is a significant issue, and we have not pulled out of it. And so, you know, what leads me to be more urgent in the discussion is some of the things that you've seen nationwide, which are relatively unprecedented, and yet we're really not taking notice of it. And the first was the Louisiana governor declared a state of emergency in Louisiana when it came to police staffing. Now, you know, that isn't quite as dramatic as some of the other state of emergencies. There's some quirks to Louisiana rules that prevented them from getting pay raises or getting new positions added within a year after a gubernatorial election. And so his state of emergency then trumped that law so that they could give the pay raises and increase the staffing levels. But that was kind of the first one, I haven't seen that before. Mm-hmm. And then the second one, honestly, was New York City, which was one of the leaders in defunding the police and took millions from their police budget and have suffered mass resignations and a lot of additional retirements. They deployed the National Guard into the subways, which is just, that one is stunning. And yet it kind of passed, and there wasn't a lot of commentary in the media about it. But we're deploying the Army, our military, to try and keep our public safe, a job which used to be done by men and women in blue, but which is not, they're not able to do it right now. And so our solution to that now is to deploy folks that were training for combat in foreign countries and deploy them within our borders to begin policing our own citizens. And that is just, that should be an absolute wake-up call that there is a crisis that we are not dealing with and not talking about. And because we're not talking about it, and then we're certainly not talking about the underlying reasons for it, and we're not even close to coming up with a solution for it.
That's a historical type moment when you consider deploying your own military to police
it is.
U.S. citizens. It's a historic moment, and it's not a moment that we certainly want to see. I mean, we want to live in a civil society.
Right.
To have a civil society, there needs to be a set kind of standard of what people allow as the everyday culture. This is what is good, and this is what is bad, and here's how we deal with what's bad, and here's how we deal with what's good. And unfortunately, there's so much in my mind, the messaging and everything that's gone out there is it's flipped everything on its head. We are celebrating, promoting the things that are bad. We're taking away accountability from people in general. The bad decisions that they're making, it's not their fault that they make bad decisions. They're being forced to make these bad decisions because society is telling them this is what you should do. And on that same moment, anything that's good is really not as good as what you think it is. Those people, you know, it's a whole different concept for them. But how do we deal with the bad when the bad is you have these gangs running through the streets of our cities, burning down cities, these flash mobs showing up and raiding grocery stores? I mean, you're having these big grocery stores shut down. Albuquerque is seeing Walmart pull out from different locations. You're seeing them pull out of all the big cities across the Midwest. On the coast because they can't afford to do business there. All this right. is like, to me, it's a crumbling of society. And the police traditionally, in my mind, have been that component that has kind of protected civil society from those things, but the courts play a critical role in that as well. And so we've got state officials that are going to be in our city here, you know, by the time this airs, they will be gone. But when we talk about things that I would like to see happen at the state, we need to reform the bail reform. That component is it's visible on the streets every single day, and they're not helping us by allowing nonviolent criminals to walk on the streets until they get picked up again or until a court date when they can finally be sentenced. That doesn't help in these situations. It turns police officers into taxi cabs. That's not what we want from our police force. That's not what public dollars should be given to. And it certainly doesn't help the morale of the officers who are having to deal with those same individuals every single day. But why would you want to keep doing that job?
Right.
So we don't get support from the state, the courts, you know, another component of it, I'm sure, when we're talking about issues coming from our state and what we need from them, we need some backbone, and we need some willingness to actually uphold laws that are already in place for violent offenders, for gun offenders, and not allow those people back out on the streets.
So we got ourselves into a time period where we tried a lot of experimentation extremely quickly. And that almost always ends in disaster. honestly. You run experiments carefully. You make decisions, you know, with some scientific backing, with some data to support what you're doing. And yet you're seeing now the slapback that happens when you go too far too fast. So San Francisco, one of the more progressive cities in the country that has tried a variety of things, including defunding their police, now, you know, absolutely snapping back the other way, trying to hire more police, trying to beef up the police budget. But like I said, that is easy to say we are going to throw money at it. It is harder then to get those folks back.
Yeah,
you're seeing Oregon, which really went whole hog into decriminalizing drugs. Well, there's consequences to that, and those are not anticipated when we hurry into things, or we just do things based on mantra, not based on data.
Right.
And so one of the consequences was a significant spike in overdose deaths. Well, okay. So
really,
you know, it that should have been somewhat predictable, right, in the first place, but. But then secondly, the fact that it's coming as a shock and now you're trying to recriminalize things, you know, shows in the first place, you've now gone several years of really lifting the lid on rules and on order, and now you're going to try and snap that back on. And, you know, anybody who has kids knows, you know, harder to do that once they're, you know, you've given them a bunch of sugar and they're running wild around the house. Hard to snap back and restore discipline. Harder still when the very folks that you're asking to do it aren't there.
Right.
So, you know, the things that you are talking about are absolutely a challenge for law enforcement, but there's always been challenges in law enforcement. So I'm not saying that that's all the end of the world, but what does get to be the end of the world then is when you're demonizing the people that are doing it. You don't see the good in them. There is no talk of it being a good profession. And you are, in fact, talking, when you say that year after year after year, you are talking people out of doing it. And then they don't do it. And then we're down to deploying the military to try and substitute for that, which is an extremely dangerous precedent, something that would have been absolutely abhorrent to everybody in the country 10 years ago. And now we'll do it in one of our most populous cities that certainly is a beacon of attention of what happens in New York City happens and is amplified around the country. And we're deploying the military because crime's so out of control in the subways. People don't feel safe, and we don't have the cops to go in there and restore order. So that if that isn't a crisis, I'm not quite sure what is, but that gets down to then what do we see here in Farmington and across the state. We've had two officers killed in the first 4 months in one of the least populous states in our country. That is unbelievable. And at the time that I did the radio show, it was about a month ago, we were like tied for third in the country with officer deaths. New Mexico was. So, you know, that means that myself as an administrator and as a leader trying to take and recruit people to come here, what I'm telling them is you are in a violent state where officers are getting killed. We had an officer shot last year and survive. We had an officer shot the year before that and survive, but both shot. And that came after 30 years where no officer in Farmington had been shot.
Right.
And then you're trying to market this as, yeah, come work for us. And that is not about money. That is about a cause. You've got to believe that what you are doing is important to our country, and it is. It should be an easy sell, but it isn't when the rhetoric has been so hostile to the police so consistently and from some of the top people in our country. And until that rhetoric changes, until we call it out and we say that we need to make reforms in policing, absolutely. That will be ongoing and evolutionary, has been since I started in 1990. But that does not mean that the men and women doing that job are not great people who are serving and sacrificing for our community, and we need them. And we absolutely do.
Absolutely. When it comes to staffing right now, Chief, where are we at?
You know, we have about 120 officers within the department. We're authorized 134 right now, but a few years ago we were 138 authorized. So we've even lowered that. We can't achieve 134. Within that 120, we have a number that are out in the academy, and we have a number that are in field training. Now, those in field training are, you know, probably deployable here within the next month to 6 weeks that will get them to full-time. But really, our actual full-time on-duty, ready for full deployment, is 105, 106, and that is, you know, critically low.
There's a show on one of the streaming services that follows the recruiting class of the Navajo Nation Police Department, kind of going through their academy and those kind of things. And one of the things they talk about is, you know, you can start with 30 people who go into the academy, but it's somewhere like 10% are all that make it. So only three actually end up sticking around for any period of time. Do you have any idea what that turnover looks like between time you go into the academy to who actually ends up coming out of it?
Ours is quite a bit higher.
Sure.
Getting through the academy, you're probably closer to 80 to 85%. And we've had more success. We've done a lot of changes to our training program in the 10 years that I've been here. We invest a lot more time, right? If somebody raises their hand and says they want to be a police officer today in America, you know, we're going to work our tail off to try and help you become a police officer. Where back in the day, we had so many candidates, you know, you didn't. Here was the strict program, this was the time frame, and we would move on to the next candidate. So we deploy a lot of more time with the officers that when they make field training, and our success rate has been higher, maybe as many as 70% make it through FTO. But already, right, you're starting to see attrition. So you've had some attrition in the academy, you've had some attrition on top of that in FTO. And then it's getting them through those first 3 or 4 years of, okay, you know, this is the profession. It isn't what you heard in the classroom, and it certainly isn't what you were watching on the podcasts or on TV. This is actually what it is every day. And we, you know, when we had the shooting last year on May 15th and our officer was shot, we saw one or two officers leave really directly related to it. This time, with the latest New Mexico State Police Officer Hare being killed, we had three officers that wound up backing out of training.
Really?
So one in the academy and two in field training. Again, it goes to what I was talking about. If you're sitting in your living room and you're thinking, oh, I wouldn't do that, well, that's what others are thinking as well. And so until we change the mantra and people see it as what it is, these are people dedicated to serving our community who are willing to put themselves on the line. That's not every day, and I'm not a guy that overdoes that, you know, we're constantly have our life on the line. But I am a guy that says, look at what happened on May 15th. And our officers charged into a guy who was committed to making a final stand and to shooting at them and shot two officers in the course of it. You better have people that are devoted and ready to sacrifice and lay it on the line for their community. And we did, but we don't in the numbers that we used to. And that is directly related to the rhetoric and the mantra that has been spewed the last 3-4 years. That we are systemically racist, that we are some of the biggest problems that America faces. And when you say that often enough, and you say it to young people who are the ones we're recruiting, it has an impact, and it definitely has.
The bad part is, Chief, of course, is that we need police officers. If we would all just make good choices and not perform stupid human tricks and hurt people and destroy other people's property and, you know, not be accountable for who we are, we wouldn't need 134 police officers.
Yes.
You know? But 70 to 80,000 calls a year, you all are called for everything. We call police for everything. Shoplifting, speeding, loud noises at night, dogs. I mean, it's for everything. Yes. I can't get along with my husband. And so much of this, unfortunately, again, it's poor choices. We drink too much. We're doing things that we should not be doing when we drink too much. I mean, I think that's one of the major issues we face here in our community is alcohol and alcohol abuse.
Yes.
Looking at policing going out into the future, how does it adapt? The need for police officers is not going to go away. Where I see this is the need is growing. I mean, and if we can't recruit, we can't see those individuals step up. Where do you see it going?
Well, that's one reason I've been speaking out a little bit more here over the last month and a half. I think, you know, two officers in 3 months, it has to be a wake-up call for us here in New Mexico as what is going on and then who is going to do these jobs. But also, you know, hidden in the criticism and hidden in the really nothing short of just stereotyping police and policing in negative terms, is the fact that we actually are doing a lot of things. So although you are correct to point out choices and things like that, we fully recognize that mental health plays a significant role in our crime numbers. We understand that alcohol abuse and drug abuse plays roles in it, and that those people need help long before they wind up getting in with the police. And so to that end, we work with the court system, we work with other law enforcement agencies, we work with social service providers to try and be part of a broader-based solution that doesn't just involve the criminalization of mental health problems, for instance. And I see progress in that, and you're hearing at the county level that we're doing better to throw resources at dealing with mental health problems. Now, the state had a lot of money this year, and they did not throw a lot of it at mental health, at drug treatments. The county of San Juan has not gotten a lot of resources to address those issues. And so if you want to help police and get us away from some of the things that, frankly, we want to be away from, I don't want to send 23-year-old officers to deal with folks who are in mental crisis. Rarely does that end well. But when there is a lack of other resources, that's what winds up happening. So, on the one hand, I see good things that are coming from partnerships within the advocate community for folks with drug problems and folks with mental health problems and the partnerships that you see around the state with law enforcement. My concern on the other hand is until we really aggressively begin saying that we need police officers, this is a profession we value, there will be bad days, there will be mistakes, we will hold them accountable, and we do. But that does not demonize the entire profession, and we need you, John, or Danny, when you're 19, 20, 21 years old, to start thinking about a life of service to your community that involves the police.
Or Susie. Yeah. Now you got to take this on the road more. We got to put you in the high schools. We got to put you in the middle schools. These are conversations. As a kid growing up in Denver, I had a very favorable view of police officers. And it's not that they weren't coming to my house for dumb things, for the stupid human tricks happening at my home, because mm-hmm. they were. But I saw them as people who I define them as heroes. I define them as individuals of integrity, people willing to step into harm's way and help protect us. I've always seen them that way. I know not everybody does. But that was the vision I had as a kindergartner, interacting with a police officer who was driving through a neighborhood handing out little trading cards, right, with police officers' faces on them, and interacting with those kids. And I think part of that too, that community policing effort, which I know you've been really good at, especially on the social media component of it. We have our police night out programs. I would like us to continue to engage our community in that way. And I think getting in front of those kids is such an important component of that, because those are the people that we need to convince.
Yes.
That policing is an important and critical part of our society, and you can play a role in that.
Yes.
A very positive role.
I think when you're looking around, and we talked a little about some of the trends you're seeing back the other way, it does involve in the schools, but it also involves the parents. And I think
always comes down to the parents for me.
A majority of Americans support the police. A majority of Americans understand that we need law enforcement, that there actually is true evil in the world. And that, yes, there's folks with mental health. Yes, there's folks that have drug and alcohol problems. But there's actually evil in the world, and we need police to be there to stop that when it happens. And we need folks to speak up more on that. And we've got to be saying back that, yes, there are mistakes. Really, the things I'm saying aren't rocket science and shouldn't be shocking. There's really only two defenses against this. And one is you just don't like the police and you hate authority figures. Okay, I get that. I'm probably not going to get you. And then the second one is the yeah, but defense. Yeah, but what about this? Yeah, but what about that? And I will fully grant that with 700,000 or 800,000 police officers across the country, we will have bad days. We will have things that don't go well. But we absolutely hold our officers accountable, and we absolutely need them. There is no yeah, but for May 15th. We needed 5 officers to strap it on, 3 of them without vests, and charge at a guy who is committed to killing people and had killed 3 already. And you are not going to get people to do that job if we can't move yeah, but. We've got to be this is an important profession that we've got to continue to do a better job of and continue to reform, and I'm all for those things, but I am not for the demonization of the profession. We've got to have people believing in the cause that we represent.
No, I think you're right. The changing of the rhetoric is critical, and for me, that's a top-down and a bottom-up approach on both sides. We need leadership who make those bold statements to say, we need police officers, we support our cops, we want them to be successful in our communities, and we want our communities to respect them so that we can have a safe community to live in, so we have safe schools for our children to go to. They have to be talking that way.
Yes.
Because when you don't, you get what we're dealing with right now.
Yes.
And that's cities that are being ran over, period, yes, by crime and running private businesses out of their communities and kids who don't feel safe in their schools. I want to transition this a little bit because there was a big announcement this week, or I don't even know what day this is airing on, so this is bad, right? But in April.
Well, then there's that.
In April, we're airing this April 15th, just so you know.
Tax day.
The first week of April, you commissioned the first armed Farmington Municipal Schools security. I'm not sure what they're calling him per se, but a security individual.
Yes.
I mean, so talk about that, because that's been something we've discussed for a number of years with the school district.
Well, it actually ties into the very topic of the day. The laws in New Mexico prevent retire and rehire of police officers. So I once one of my officers retires, he cannot come back and work for us without stopping his pension. And so once they retire, really they're either leaving the state to continue in policing or they're getting out of policing. One of the two happens.
Which is absurd,
which
by the way.
Such a self-inflicted wound.
Yes. Individuals who have all the experience, they have the ties to the community,
yeah,
they know they're a part of that fabric, and we're telling them, sorry, you can't do that here.
Yeah. Now, there was a change to the law that will allow for a brief period of a few years you to hire line-level officers back as long as certain criteria are met. So there is a little bit of a break in that retire and rehire, but really what that is an acknowledgement of how short we are and the struggle we're having recruiting, right? So now we're having to change it because we're losing officers to other states and we're still short.
Very reactive.
Right. So how this interacts then with the school district, and I really give New Mexico or Farmington School District a lot of credit for this, is they can hire our retired officers. So it's a different retirement system. So an officer can retire from the PD and go to work for the school district. And the arrangement that we've worked out with the school district and Superintendent Deal is we will continue to run an SRO division. I have two officers and a sergeant in there right now. And the school district will hire the individual. He'll be a school district employee, but he'll work with and be trained by us. So we will ensure his certifications to make sure he can carry, make sure that he's safe, make sure that he's got the defensive tactics and all the other requirements that would be for a police officer in the school districts. We will do that, and we will run the unit for the school district, but they will actually be able to hire some of the retired officers and bring them back in a capacity where they're actually functioning very similar to one of our SROs. So yeah, it's actually an exciting pilot project.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. Has Superintendent Deal discussed what that number looks like, how many they would like to hire into those positions?
You know, I think right now it was the one, and this has been something that really City Manager Mays has really pushed for through the years and worked with the school district for a number of years to finally get this to come to fruition. And like I said, you know, I'm very proud of Cody getting the school district to head down this direction. It's not their job usually, right? Their job's to teach.
Right.
But they're partnering with us in making sure that the teaching environment and learning environment is safe. And so, you know, I think we believe eventually it'll be four officers from them, but I don't know at what timetable that'll come. And we'll see. There'll be things that we didn't anticipate, you know, with any new project, and we'll have to work through those together. But I'm confident that it's a very doable program that will enhance safety within the schools, and I'm very excited about it.
That's great. You know, policing has to change. It always, just like any profession, you know, it adapts, it grows. One of the things I know that we have focused on is the real-time crime center component. You know, people want to feel safe, and they want to know that if somebody steals their car, we can find where their car went. I mean, there's a lot of components to it, but the schools are tied into our real-time crime center. We have private businesses that are tied into our real-time crime center. And I know we've utilized those that resource to solve crimes every day.
Yes.
Every day. I just wanted to point that out, that we are constantly challenging the process to find methods to police better, to provide a safe community. The other components that we've done here over the past few years, we've talked about it on the show, is obviously the Park Ranger Division. We've seen those numbers depleted there for a while. We're getting some of those back, so we'll see their presence more in our downtown and our parks areas. The Alternative Response Unit has been a big component. We're dealing, in February we had 349 calls for the ARU to help deal with downed subjects. Mm-hmm. So again, we're there. We're trying to focus officer resources where officer resources is needed, put the ARU on that.
Right.
I think that's been a tremendous success. We've seen that grow. What other things have we been, the accountability component, Chief, and this is one thing I know you've been very passionate about since you've been here. The Internal Affairs Division of the Farmington Police Department has grown underneath your watch, and that's because we believe in training and retraining, and when opportunities arise, we got to make sure that we're addressing any potential concerns. And so the Internal Affairs segment of it, it may have been, as far as policing in New Mexico, above the curve, and implementing that and making sure accountability was, a priority.
And, the Internal Affairs, you watch enough TV and, all officers hate Internal Affairs, and that's kind of the Hollywood version of it. But really, we use Internal Affairs in conjunction with our training. So we take a look at what are we actually doing on the street versus what we think we're training. And then if the reality on the street is different than what we think we're training, then we need to adjust somewhere, right? And either our policies are missing or our training isn't as effective or we've actually had misconduct, really.
Right.
But it is not always that we're bringing our officers in and then disciplining them and they're making all these mistakes. We hold them accountable, but sometimes it's holding me accountable, right? What are the policies? What is the training that I've implemented? And is it effective? And are we getting what we want out of it? So, we are very self-critical, and that is something I believe in, that if you can't be, then you will have problems. You have to be able to look at yourself honestly and see the strengths and the weaknesses and then adjust and address those weaknesses. And so that is something I am proud of with FPD. We've had bad days through my 10 years. We deal with a dynamic world, and we ask a lot of young men and women to go out and fix problems that society really hasn't addressed. And sometimes that doesn't go well, and then we wind up having to deal with those. And sometimes you've seen them in the media, sometimes we've been
there.
But so much every day goes on behind the scenes that our public really should believe. Our department looks self-critically at what we do and how we do it and looks for how we can do it better. And so we brought in all sorts of new trainings, like the bystander training, which is national recommended. And we brought it in the wake of George Floyd. That was one of the things they wanted, was the other officers to intervene when they see something going wrong. We trained the entire department in that last year. So that is something that not every department does, but we've been very progressive in that. And some of the other things that you talked about are more just as a community, what have we done? The ARU unit, those calls used to go to the fire department and the police. So I would dispatch officers to man down calls all the time. It was an inebriate call. Overwhelmingly, and you could see in our data, that was one of the times that officers were either attacked or wound up having to use force in the course of that contact. Well, we removed that, right? So there's 349 instances with law enforcement or having to run fire units to deal with a subject that now we're dealing with ARU, much more humane, much more effective, less dangerous for the community, less dangerous for our officers. So very effective way. And the real-time crime center and our ability to partner with businesses and the school district to ensure if something does happen, we're going to know what's going on so we can get our officers in there safely and quickly to react to it. And so those are all very good things.
They are very good things. And I appreciate the council's support of those those initiatives over the years. Because it's critical. It's critical. We challenge the process, and we're trying to find new ways to be more effective in these jobs. Every good institution or corporation that I work with on the private side has a robust internal affairs, quote unquote, internal affairs division. If you train somebody to do something, you need to verify that they're actually doing what they're what they've been trained to do.
Right.
And so much of what I deal with on my private, the private industry side is dealing with safety. Mm-hmm. You know, we want each and every night, every employee who's out there, if they're driving a big rig, they're driving a truck on the road, we want to make sure that they get home. And it takes a lot of training and know-how to make sure that they're doing that. And you got to verify that they're doing all the things that they need to do.
Right.
Because their safety and the safety of those around them is paramount.
Yes.
Period. Chief, thanks again for joining us. You know, a lot of great information out there for folks who want to learn more about the Farmington Police Department. If you're interested in policing as a career, I encourage you to look into it. What would be the best way for people to get more information on that aspect?
You know, you can look on our Facebook page, and we've got a bunch of different links. But you can also, we have a Farmington Police Department recruiting Facebook page, or you can just call the station, and that's 505-599-1001. And we will route you to one of our recruiters, and we can talk with you. And honestly, you will not regret it. This is a great profession. I've been in it 33 years. I'm very proud of the FPD and the job that our men and women are doing. And you'll never regret a day of doing it.
Well, and I can think of a number of areas where policing couldn't be much better. I can't think of many areas would be much better to be a cop than here. In the city of Farmington.
I agree.
We have a great community.
But a lot of community support.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us today. We hope you learned a lot. And again, I just encourage you to, let's promote our police officers. Let's make good choices as community members. Let's protect each other and make sure that each of us gets home every night. We'll see you next time.